Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Mr. Khosa at 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock rather, and 8 o'clock as well. Right now on this day in 1899, on the 28th of November in 1899, the British would defeat the Boer forces in the Second Boer War. I don't know if that means the war ended at this time. In 1919, on this day, a lady by the name of Nancy Astor would be elected as the first female Member of Parliament in the UK, a Member of House of Commons in the UK. Interestingly enough, she would be US-born, so might even be the first US-born Member of Parliament elected. In 1943, on this day, there was a meeting in Tehran in Iran at a conference that was taking place there. The meeting had some very interesting participants who discussed strategy. I don't know what strategy means, but the three participants that met at this particular conference were FDR, that was Franklin Roosevelt, the President of the United States at the time, Winston Churchill, the Prime Minister of the UK, and Joseph Stalin, the leader of the Soviet Union at the time. I wonder what they were discussing. I wonder what strategy meant. In 1988, on this day, Pablo Picasso's Acrobat and Harlequin painting would sell for $38.46 million US dollars. 1994, on this day, Jeffrey Dahmer would be clubbed to death in prison by a fellow inmate. Yes, I said clubbed to death. Interesting way to go, considering the life of Jeffrey Dahmer. In 2022, on this day, the team at Merriam-Webster would officially recognize the word gaslighting as the word of the year. You're tuned into the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha. And on the show today, we are taking a look at Spar Group results. They gave us an update for their year ended September 2024. I've got a conversation with the company's CEO, Angelo Swartz, to see how they performed. We've also got a conversation with the CEO of Boxer around their listing. They went live today. We got the publicly traded shares listed on the JSE at 9 o'clock this morning after that IPO was successfully oversubscribed prior to that. So we're going to catch up with Boxer, get a sense of how today went for them. Then we've got a conversation with the team at Standard Bank and Liberty around Black Friday. We know that that is technically tomorrow, but we've been seeing the specials from today, some from as earlier as the start of November. But we're going to dig into that and see how we can make the most of it as consumers without breaking the bank and getting into unnecessary debts over that. And then we wrap things up, as always, on a Thursday with an SME. This week's SME is the founder of a company called Zaka. He joins me in studio to tell us how his fintech solution is miles ahead of everyone else's.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As always, we kick off the show with how the markets have been moving. Just bear in mind, markets would have been moving a little thin today as it is Thanksgiving in the United States, so US markets would be closed. But nonetheless, I am joined by Senior Market Analyst at Exynos, Terence Hove, to take a look at the market movements throughout the day, see if we can make sense of them. Good evening, Terence. Always lovely to catch up with you. US markets being closed, Asian markets would have been driving a lot of the movements early this morning along with the main London session. What did we make of the movements today?
Yeah, good evening, Jimmy. Yeah, I think, as you said, that the U.S., Asian markets and the European markets would be the main drivers of liquidity today. And I think we see that story coming through in our South African rand. In the earlier sessions, you know, it was, you know, quite offered, but right now, it's come back strongly, you know, as we've gone into the close of business. So, you know, good rand story that we're seeing. And, of course, we wanted to get below 18 because along with other emerging markets, you know, it's suffered quite a bit. So it's taken advantage, you know, in the later part of the day of the U.S. Markets being closed. But again, if the U.S. comes back online tomorrow after the Thanksgiving holiday, you know, we are to see whether, you know, that momentum is going to keep on or probably, you know, that dollar strength story that's been really the moving headline, you know, post President-elect Trump's election victory, you know. So again, more dollar story, but the rand has been doing well, you know, through the later part of today.
Terence, while we're looking at currencies, let's take a look at Bitcoin. It's kind of went very, very close to $100,000 a coin, failed to breach that level, came back down to 90-odd thousand. We're back at 95. It seems likely that we'll breach 100,000. I want to get your thoughts around where we stand at the moment, obviously with a Trump presidency, as you announced. That bodes well for the crypto landscape. We've definitely seen a crypto resurgence since he was announced as the victor there. Do you think we'll get to 100,000 by mid-December? Possibly end of December?
Well, you know, Jimmy, you know, Bitcoin now is the gift that keeps on giving. So we could even get to 100,000 before then. You know, I mean, the price action has retraced quite a bit. It's found support around the, call it 90,830 odd level. And it's starting to pull back, to move back higher. And, you know, should it gain more momentum from that support level that it got, you know, it will likely shoot higher than 100,000. So, yes, I think, you know, at least by mid-December, if not sooner, we'll see it going, pushing higher. And Bitcoin, you know, is a remarkable story around the presidency of Donald Trump, you know, and especially, you know, if we think about his earlier, you know, campaign strategies when he went to the crypto conferences, embracing crypto. So he is being seen as very crypto friendly and deregularizing the whole industry around, you know, the adoption of crypto and the ability for crypto to thrive under his presidency. That's what we've been seeing, you know, in Bitcoin. That's the story that we've been seeing, you know, in that price action, that regulation is going to be more relaxed under, you know, President Donald Trump. And you know, all the other cryptos are already, you know, moving in that positive wave as well. So again, when it comes to the regulation, we'll see how much of it is going to loosen, how much of it is going to implement to really support Bitcoin, and should it be as extensive as, you know, the Bitcoin or the crypto enthusiast are expecting, then, you know, we could go north of 100,000.
Well, that certainly doesn't bode well for Gary Gensler and his team at the SEC, because that means that all of their work is going to take a very different tone when Donald Trump decides to potentially reshuffle the SEC appointments. But that's a story for another day. Terence, I want to look at the Chinese markets. They were trading a little weaker. You mentioned, of course, that with everything that's happening around the world, sentiment at the moment is kind of in between. I'm looking at just how they've been trading this week. When markets like Tokyo markets, the Nikkei was down for most of the week. Today, that was up, but the Chinese markets were down for this week. Is there something at the moment that seems to be weighing heavily on whether it's Asian markets or just global markets as a whole?
Yeah, it is. And the question is being asked, how long is this Trump trade going to last? And by that, I mean everything around the presidency. That's a very big factor at the moment. And we're seeing it, as you mentioned, in the, you know, Chinese market, and predominantly because earlier in the week, Trump came out and said he's going to impose an additional 10% on all Chinese goods, you know, coming into the U.S. Now, that's quite significant. And he's from the onset being, you know, very aggressive with the tariffs that he's been talking about, and you know, anyone else that's going to be targeted with his tariff strategy, as we're seeing with China. And that's what we're seeing, because that's quite significant. If he says 10% tariff on all Chinese goods, you know, that's quite significant, and that's what's weighing in on the, you know, weighing that market down. So I think, you know, as it rolls out more, It's really not going to be positive for the Chinese market as President Donald Trump's presidency, you know, gets underway. But again, the question is, are they going to be able to sit down, have bilateral conversations and agreements, that I think Trump is using this as a strategy to somehow balance out, you know, the Chinese momentum and effect, and again, the race with technology. You know, now we've got AI, the chips being a very big factor as well in terms of, you know, sanctioning U.S. Entities from supplying the Chinese market. So that is the story that we're seeing playing out in that weaker price action in the Chinese market.
2025 is definitely going to be an interesting year. I would advise anyone that hasn't already got the X platform to get it on their phones, because that's how we're going to be getting our market news from Donald J. Trump. We'll leave the conversation there. Terrence, thanks as always for the time and for the insights. Terrence Hove, Senior Market Analyst at XNest, joining us to take a look at the market movements throughout the day, what's been keeping the markets on their toes, and what's been not happening in the likes of the US that are closed for the day.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The time this morning was 7:05 when the Spar Group Limited gave us their update for the full year ended 30 September 2024. It is quite a lengthy update. There's a couple of moving parts that we are going to dig into, and I'm joined on the line by the Spar CEO, Angelo Swartz, to take a look at the performance of the company as well as some of the other announcements that came out with it. Good evening, Angelo. Lovely to catch up with you as always. Good turnout to the end of the year. Group turnovers up 4%, profit after tax up 20%, net borrowings down almost a full 10% there. How do you and the management team reflect on the year that was?
Yeah, Jimmy, thank you for having me. Always nice to chat. Yeah, it's been a tough year, really challenging trading environments in all our geographies. But I think we've managed to sail these tough seas quite well and really, I guess, make some good decisions and act fairly decisively when we've needed to. And we really, as challenging as the year was, we really gratified with the result at the end of it.
Angelo, you mentioned obviously the challenges that you had to go through, and we've known about some of the challenges. You and I have spoken about some of the challenges in the past. Let's get into some of the defining decisions that have been made throughout the year. I mean, the decision to exit Poland could not have been an easy one for the business to make, but nonetheless, the business took that decision to exit the Polish region and mark that business as a discontinued operation in these financials. Take me through that decision and the impact of that decision on the financials for this year.
Yeah, so I think the business really looked at Poland as an opportunity and as a vector for growth. We at the time that we entered that market and were making this decision to enter that market, 2018 or 2019, we were quite buoyant about our prospects in Europe. We had an Irish business that was really firing and a Swiss business that we had taken from being loss-making to being quite profitable in a relatively short space of time. So we were quite bullish about our prospects in Europe. Took ownership of that business, a bit of a long, drawn-out affair, having taken that, bought that business out of liquidation. Took transfer of that business a few days before COVID hit and lockdowns were in place, which really limited our decision-making and what we were able to do to grow that business in the first 2 years. And to some extent, where we've ended up, I think, is a result of those limitations. But one can't blame that. Everybody had to deal with that challenge. So really what we were looking at is a market in Poland that is in the European context very fast growing, a relatively large market, but 1.5 times the GDP, 1.5 times the size of SA, an economy that is fast consolidating and formalizing, and a retail sector that was fairly buoyant and there were large opportunities there. Unfortunately, we weren't able to capitalize on those as quickly as we should have. We had an expanding cost base in that country, and our positioning in SA changed quite dramatically. And really, the business had to deal with and have a look at our priorities. And our priority market is our home market of SA. And whilst there is potential, long-term potential in the Polish market, I don't think one wants to risk your home market to do so. And it would have taken some time before that business was profitable. Our priority had to be keeping cash in SA and making sure our SA business was as profitable as possible. And that management focus return to our home market of South Africa, where, as you know, we have a very competitive retail industry and one that, that you need all your wits about you to navigate.
Mm. And looking back at the Polish business and the performance of that discontinued operation, it did have the largest margins of any of your regions, but at the same time, it was the only entity that was, or the only region that was loss-making. Where to from here for the SPAR Group? I mean, you still have the Irish operations, you still have the Swiss operations and the Southern African operations. Are you looking at other regions? Are you looking to regroup a little bit and say, before we dip into another region, let's continue to focus on that home market and grow it a little bit more, understanding that, of course, the likes of Boxer are coming in, albeit at a different market segment, but still coming into your space, having listed today?
Yeah, so Jimmy, I think our focus in the next 3 to 5 years is really consolidating in our two core markets, being SA and Ireland. I don't think, unless something really opportunistic comes along, that we'd be looking outside of those markets for growth. We're reviewing our investment in Switzerland, as well as a smaller investment that we have in the southwest of England, and trying to figure out how those fit into our broader portfolio. But the focus will be on really driving profitability and sales in our two core markets, being SA and Ireland, and really focusing on reducing the levels of debt that we have and solidifying our position as the second biggest grocery chain in the country.
Angelo, let's look at the SAP issues. You and I spoke about these in the past. We've spoken about how it's taken a lot longer than expected to implement the SAP changes. Where do we stand on that, and what does that mean for the business?
Yeah, so we've had really good progress in the last 6 months in stabilizing the system in KZN and normalizing the gross margins. Our second 6 months performance was badly impacted, or not badly, but it was impacted by the gross margin performance in KZN. We've stabilized the sales in KZN, and those have normalized completely. And when I spoke to you after our half year results, I think I would have said that we had a plan in place to fix the gross margin, but that there had to be a system upgrade that we planned to deliver at the end of our financial year, which we did. So we deployed the system in the middle of September. The results since then have been strong, and our profit in the first month of our new financial year in October were really strong coming out of KZN. So we feel like we on the back end of those challenges, at least insofar as our KZN facility is concerned. And we're looking forward to the next iteration of the implementation, which will be in our Build It facility around the middle of 2025.
Angelo, before we wrap things up, I want to take a look at some other changes, some board changes, independent non-executive director changes that were obviously put out with the SENS announcement today.
Yeah.
Take me through just what's been happening there and what it means for the business. I mean, it doesn't seem like the changes are too material in affecting the ongoing operations of the business, but some regulatory things where you have to notify people of these changes, I suppose.
Yes. So Trudy Makaya, who's been on our board for the last 13 or 14 months, who is an exceptional individual. Trudy is a former deputy director at the Competitions Commission of SA, and exceptional economist and former advisor to the president, economic advisor to the president, and has now joined the president's economic council, has been offered a position and has decided to take up a full-time employment with Boston Consulting Group, who I'm sure you're familiar with. Trudy, at this stage in her life, I think, sees that as a massive opportunity. She's still quite young and really looking forward to get involved in that consultancy in a more detailed basis. She has been on their board for some time. So we're really excited for, unfortunately, I think that has meant that she's had to prioritize her time and has decided to step down from our board. Which she'll be missed. She's really added immense value to the SPAR board. But she remains a friend of SPAR's and has offered whatever advice and assistance she can give going forward. We wish her well in her new adventure and really hope that her role as economic advisor to the president or the economic council is as successful as possible for all of our sakes. And then her role at BCG, I think she's going to do exceptionally well. She's a very well... a very, very bright and wise individual. Nothing more than that, Jimmy.
Angelo, how do you see the next 12 months or even beyond that shaping up for the business? I mean, we've touched on obviously the core areas of focus for the business. You touched on the consumer being constrained and the environment being a constrained environment at the start of our conversation. Are you optimistic going into 2025 that economic conditions and macro conditions, which in large part you can't do anything about, are going to be better for your business and other businesses?
I think so. Yeah, the economic outlook in SA, particularly post the elections, has been really, really positive. We've been really happy to see our sentiment has changed, and we feel the same way. I think obviously that the broader macro isn't only driven by sentiment, but we see interest rates declining as I guess most people do, and that will be supportive of growth. The two-pot system that was implemented certainly has seen a flow of funds into the economy, and that supported retail, although supported durables, I guess, more than perishable goods. But that is positive. The overall mood in South Africa getting better. Inflation coming down, there are lots to be positive about, Jimmy, and I think all of that will bode well for the year ahead. I doubt it will be easy, and I'm sure we will have many challenges to navigate. But I think South Africa is in a much better place than it has been for some time, and that should support everybody's performance. I think the environment in Europe is slightly different, not as optimistic as SA, but we have strong management teams in our European operations, and I'm sure that they will also navigate these challenges as well as they have this year.
Well, hopefully the next year is a far more positive year. Not that this one wasn't. There was a lot of hard work and a lot of turnaround changes that needed to be put in place. And hopefully next year you and I can catch up and have a conversation around a return to dividend. I know a lot of shareholders might be looking forward to that, but it seems the business is well on the right track towards that. We wish you all the best of luck, Angelo, to you and your team for the next coming year. And if anything does come up between now and then, be sure to give us a call. That was Angelo Swartz, who is the CEO of the Spa Group, joining us to reflect on the financial performance of the year that was for them, the year that ended September 2024.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by the Standard Bank Group. It's 6:29 and we're taking a look at the Black Friday phenomenon. We're going to unpack this in a bit more detail with the team at Standard Bank and Liberty. I'm joined on the line by Zandile Makoba, who is an economist at Liberty. And of course, Liberty is part of the Standard Bank Group. Good evening, Zandile. Thanks so much for taking the time. I don't know about you, but I've noticed that over the last couple of years, Black Friday has taken on many different shapes and forms in South Africa. I remember a time where it was all the rage, it was all the craze, platforms were crashing, banking apps couldn't process payments. Now we're doing it over a month, things look very different. Have you noticed a change or a shift in Black Friday trends over the last couple of years?
So it has been a decade of Black Friday in South Africa, and, you know, there's always a conversation, I think, amongst consumers around, you know, Black Friday not being the same, but Black Friday, I have fun. And, you know, to your point, very early on, it was a big phenomenon. It was very big reductions in the cost of things, and we had the same energy that we see in America with people rushing to the stores and really trying to get the bargains that they are looking forward to. Over the years, that has changed. Both the retailers and the retail malls have created a much more accommodating environment for this period. We now know that consumers are saving their money for this period when they are looking for those bargains. You know, a lot of the retail malls will extend their operating times to accommodate larger numbers. It's become Black November as opposed to just Black Friday, and all of that has improved the experience for the consumer, but also created a much more positive affiliation between retailers and consumers through that process.
Zandile, has the economic impact been as positive? Because I think about the Black Friday phenomenon and consumer spending and spending behavior in that time. Consumers are definitely looking for bargains on the one side, but on the other side, you sometimes have retailers that might hike up their prices or the markets that might increase prices and then make it look like there's a discount when there isn't really. What's the economic impact of Black Friday from a spending point of view?
So from a spending point of view, what we did do is kind of look at what happened to retail sales in the month of November across the different categories. And at current prices, what you do see is that most categories remain more or less the same, aside from general dealers, which is your grocery stores. That since 2014, 2013, when we started seeing Black Friday in our market, has actually increased significantly. The other category that increased is clothing and footwear. So at current prices, we're seeing like, you know, peaks of like 34% month-on-month increase in clothing sales. And more later towards more recent years, post-COVID, we're starting to see upticks in retail sales for furniture and hardware goods, which wasn't one of the big categories in earlier periods. But what's also happening is that consumers seem to be shifting expenditure to March, to November rather, and decreasing it in other periods of the year. So we're looking forward for the discounts. We're planning ahead. If you want to buy a TV, you might delay a few months to be able to do that. And so that's working out well for the consumer. What we're also seeing is that it hasn't had a huge dramatic impact on credit use amongst consumers. So very much the ability to plan ahead, maybe even save for the spending that you're wanting to make at the end of the year has been an advantage for consumers. They're able to think ahead and make sure that they have budgeted for what they want to take advantage of, which is actually a positive in terms of improving household balance sheets and making people able to plan better around their money.
One thing about the South African consumer I've always loved is that ability to save and plan ahead. I mean, if we look at just the Stokvel market and the Stokvel environment, it's those kinds of philosophies around saving that definitely benefit the consumer. I was actually going to come to that, Zandile, around the fact that are we seeing consumers go into more debt to service these Black Friday things? But the other thing that you touched on that I want to look at as well is around those spending patterns from a retailer perspective, right? So we've looked at it from a consumer perspective. They kind of plan out their lives. They know what they're going for. And I, for one, have also come through a very interesting Black Friday journey where I used to go for certain types of items at Black Friday. Now you're very strategic about, do I need this? This is what I need, the bigger ticket items and all of that. Has that affected how retailers are now planning their lives? Are retailers saying, you know what, we know that throughout the year we might not sell as many of these particular items and we might have more inventory, or is this a chance for retailers to get rid of old inventory that they don't want at a reduced price?
That's a very important point, because what you see, what we spoke about is really more the sales at current prices, which doesn't account for inflation. But when you actually account for inflation and look at real patterns of spend, what you're actually seeing is that there is no real uptick in real expenditure. And this is also paralleled with the fact that, you know, the past decade has been a high inflation environment aside from the periods around COVID and post-COVID. So people were dealing with a higher inflation rate, higher interest rates, so that propensity to consume was not as strong. And to manage that, you know, retailers do try to stimulate consumption, meet the consumer where they are with more deals and so on. So has the industry, the retail industry, gained from Black Friday? I would say not, because in terms of real consumption, we're not doing more or extra. We're just shifting around and moving around. And in fact, one might argue that this is an opportunity for consumers to kind of gain from retailers. because now they will be cutting out from their own profits to kind of make some special deals for consumers. So there's a reduction in price markup more than an increase in price markup. So it's a very nice way of kind of developing some goodwill between retailers and consumers. And it seemingly has worked out very well in the South African market between those two stakeholders.
Zandile, do we think that we're going to see new trends emerge from the Black Friday kind of phenomenon if we look at maybe other sectors or other industries? I mean, I, for one, would not be against a Black Friday deal on a home loan or a bigger ticket item like a vehicle. I'm okay with that. If a bank wants to say, we'll give you 40% off of your home loan for Black Friday, I think people would be in for that, right?
That does sound quite interesting. But yeah, if you think of your property market, you don't want to lend yourself to something like that because it's also the way in which we store wealth as households. So a discount on that end is negatively impacting another consumer if you think about it. But we are definitely seeing the emergence of new trends. So vehicle dealers are coming on board, creating some Black Friday specials around the secondhand vehicles and new vehicles market, which is quite an interesting one. How that will take up will be quite interesting, given that we are still in a high interest rate environment. But it's something that is emerging and a little bit new, and definitely something that's much more new post-COVID. More happening with the furniture and hardware environment. So really kind of working on this idea of people investing more in their homes and creating environments in which they can work and play and live in. That wasn't a trend that was strong pre-COVID. And with the hybrid work environment, we'll see how long that one lasts as well.
Yeah, well, if I'm buying the furniture, I might as well put the furniture in a house, right? I think we do it, right? I say we try it for 1 year, we see how it works out. I just want to see something, but let's see how that goes. But we'll leave the conversation there, Zandile. Thanks so much for the time and for the insights. It's been lovely catching up. It's Zandile Makhoba, who is an economist at Liberty, which of course is part of the Standard Bank Group. This feature was brought to you by the Standard Bank Group.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best Forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise. And you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
In sticking with value, I think today was the best day to have this particular event take place. We gained a new CEO of publicly listed companies. I'm talking, of course, about the CEO of Boxer, the latest company to join the JSE. The CEO of the company, Marek Masoyada, joins me now on the line to reflect on the listing day that was, interestingly enough, coming just around the festive period. Everybody can get good Black Friday deals, and one of those deals could be Boxer shares. Good evening, Marek. Thanks so much for taking the time. First and foremost, congratulations on the big move. What does it feel like to be the CEO of a listed company now?
Good evening, Jimmy, and thanks for having me. Well, we had a day of celebration today, the culmination of quite a long project with both the Boxer and the Pick and Pay teams working together to make this happen. And yeah, a great day on the JSE. For us at Boxer, it's certainly new territory in terms of coming into the public space. But we believe, that our brand has come of age and ready to step up onto the main stage with the big players.
Marek, when you look at your brand, I mean, let's start with the IPO. 8.5 billion rand placed at 54 rand. That was oversubscribed. There was clearly a lot of interest coming into today. And we kind of anticipated that the share price would do well. Opening day, you were up significantly. Did you anticipate that you'd do as well as you did?
Jimmy, you know, we've been talking to investors over the last couple of months, and clearly there's been a lot of interest in the Boxer story. From an investor point of view, not much has been known about Boxer. We've been embedded within the Pick and Pay numbers. But as we've told the story to more and more people, I think, you know, we've really got a lot of supporters out there. So, yes, the book was multiple times oversubscribed. So, you know, yeah, we thought that there would be a strong demand. But, you know, unfortunately, a lot of the subscribers to the allocation only got a small portion because of that oversubscription. So you never quite know what's going to happen on the day. So really, it was a delight when the first trade happened. And on the JC, there was a lot of excitement to see the jump that happened with the first price.
Marek, what does this mean for the business? I mean, from my perspective, it certainly means you and I are going to be catching up on a very regular basis as we report on numbers and get other developments. But from a business perspective, I imagine it doesn't really change your focus. You guys are still focused on delivering the best discount grocery store that you can. And from a business perspective, it just means more compliance.
Look, absolutely. I mean, I don't think there's any change to our strategy and the day-to-day operations in the business. Clearly, we've had to build a layer of governance. We have a new board of directors in place to deal with the requirements of being a listed company. But, you know, the way we see it, Jimmy, is that, you know, entering this public domain gives a great exposure to our Boxer brand. And we see it opening doors in terms of enabling our expansion plan, being able to show our balance sheet and our robust income statement to developers, property owners, etc., you know, so that we can open more stores in different parts of the country.
Speaking of opening stores, Marek, I remember when I caught up with Sean Summers when Boxer was still under the Pick and Pay family, there was that conversation to say you intended to open more stores in the new year. I think it was north of 70 stores or so that were planned and pipelined as going into 2025. Can you give us an update on what that looks like? Have those numbers been revised? Have you got kind of a clearer roadmap around what expansion for Boxer looks like now that you are kind of fully standing on your own?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we've given guidance around 30 new superstores and 30 to 40 Boxer liquor stores on an annual basis. So that's certainly what we strive for in terms of adding to the estate. We've had a nice year this year, and I think we'll get close to the 30 in the superstores by the end of our financial year, which is February. We've been opening stores over the last 3 or 4 weeks, you know, just literally every day. Including today on the day of listing. So yes, you know, that's definitely, you know, a significant part of our strategy is to spread our brand, spread our stores.
Well, you currently have, I think, just north of 500 stores. So clearly the brand is already quite visible and the market is receptive to what it is that you are putting out there. Marek, are you optimistic around the economic landscape? Obviously, coming into a market like South Africa, your brand is known here, it is loved here, and it is used here. Are you optimistic about the conditions in South Africa? And alongside that, are you perhaps looking at other regions that might be of interest to you?
I think for the moment, we believe that there's an extensive opportunity here within our South African, and that includes Eswatini within those borders. So we're not looking to go outside of that really at the moment. In terms of, you know, the last 5 years, we all know have been quite tough on an economic front, but Boxer's done really well over that time as there's been a great search for value from consumers. And I think, you know, it is the biggest segment of the South African formal food market that we play in. And we don't see any change in that, but we are hopeful for more favorable economic conditions going forward, with lower interest rates, low inflation, lower fuel prices, etc., a reduction in load shedding. Hopefully all translating into more money in our consumers' pockets.
Marek, we touched on this at the start of the chat about how the initial public offering was oversubscribed from an institutional investor point of view. Is there a plan as a business to perhaps look at how to solve that problem now that you are listed, you've gotten the big listing thing out of the way? If there's still interest from retail and institutional investors around Boxer, are you saying they must go get it via the JSE, or are you guys planning something special?
No, I mean, absolutely. The shares are freely available, and I think there was a healthy volume traded here today as, people either bought shares, sold shares, etc. I mean, there was a healthy allocation to retail shareholders as part of the allocation earlier this week. And yes, it's going to be very interesting to see how that evolves between institutional, retail, and also, international and local. But that will probably settle down over the next few weeks. But yeah, as I said earlier, we were heavily oversubscribed, and there was a very wide base of different kinds of investors that took up shares.
Well, it's certainly going to be an interesting 2025, and you and I are going to have a lot more of these kinds of conversations. Welcome to the world of listed investments, Marek and team. We wish you guys all of the very best in your journey, and we hope to see you guys continue to succeed. We'll leave the conversation there for now, though. That was Marek Masoyada, who is the CEO of Boxer, on their listing today. Interestingly enough, the share price today traded all the way up to 63 rand and 51 cents. We expected around 54 rand, just below the 60 rand listing mark, but clearly markets opened at 60 rand, traded all the way to 63 rand 50. We'll keep an eye on this, and we'll see how the story continues to unfold.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's the final SME of the month, and I'm joined in studio this time around by our small business founder, the founder of a company called Zaka Technologies. Teboho Twala joins me in studio to take a look at his business, understand it a little bit better, and see if we can help the business grow. Good evening, Teboho. Thanks so much for taking the time to come through to studio. Tell me about Zaka. It's certainly an interesting business. Tell me about the name and the idea. Tell me where it started.
Yes, good evening, and good evening to your listeners, and good evening to you. I love this show. I listen to your show. And yes, your business started, it was actually inspired in my Master's in Entrepreneurship and New Venture Creation class at Wits Business School. But the idea has always been there, but it's been something that I've always been curious about. Because, I mean, growing up, I had seen how my grandmother used to sell and how people used to take goods from her on deferred payments. And, of course, entering the payment space, it was a case of we can provide the normal payment solution, but over and above, what else can we do? And we wanted to solve this problem of small businesses losing, if you aggregate billions of rands every year because of deferred payments, and deferred payments they can't recover. And that's because of lack of that agreement between the small businesses and the person who takes goods or services on deferred payments. And if you look in the buy now, pay later ecosystem, it's predominantly on the e-commerce businesses. Mm. And there's lots of small businesses that are not on e-commerce.
Yes.
They are on bricks and mortar in the streets by the corners and that sort of stuff. So we thought, what about those? And because those are really predominantly neglected and in unbanked markets. And we thought that if we were to address this problem, we are helping them achieve two things. One, economical inclusivity, as well as financial inclusivity.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm thinking, as we're saying this, and you and I spoke about this a little bit before we went on air, around mechanic in the township who services vehicles on a regular basis, doesn't have the formal infrastructure of an e-commerce platform to manage all of this stuff. So tell me about the Zaka solution. How is that solution different to another payment platform or another payment service that exists in the market?
Yeah, so Zaka payment solution can do everything that all the other payments solutions in form of a card device can do.
Mm-hmm.
But over and above that, it gives typical example of a mechanic. If I went to a mechanic and I can pay with my card 1,000 rand, mm-hmm. because mechanic charged me 3,000 rand, I want to defer the 2,000 rand. So the 2,000 rand I want to defer, unlike before, mechanic has now an option on the Zakar machine to be able to capture your information. One, your ID number, which is verified through Home Affairs. Mm-hmm. It will reject it if it's not the correct ID number. Banking details, where they can be able to then debit the 2,000 rand, perhaps over a period of 4 months, mm-hmm. 500 each month. It will then verify the banking details you provide. If it's not the right one, it will also reject it because it's connected to all the banks. Mm-hmm. And then it will send a debit check to you, which then therefore means you can't dispute that debit order. Mm-hmm. So then the mechanic, in that way, the mechanic is then somehow provided with a bit of security that they never had before. Because mm-hmm. previously, it would be a case of they take your number, put it on a piece of paper somewhere or a notebook. If that notebook gets lost, it's lost. And also, they just only sometimes just have your number on their cell phone and they call you and you don't pick up.
You don't answer
or you block their numbers. And sometimes they even call and spend so much money. If they know where you live, like how people live in the township, they will have to drive there, come back. Sometimes you'd find the money they spent trying to recover the money, this deferred payment is far more than what that deferred payment is. So it's even costlier for them to recover that money. So we've made this life easy to say no. Sometimes, wittingly or unwittingly, customers are not able to pay. Mm. And we can state many examples why people don't pay. Because sometimes they say they will have the money by end of the month. Come end of the month, something more urgent comes up. And they feel like, okay, I'll see the mechanic at some other time.
So what happens in that case, Teboho, if I've got a debit check on the Zakar platform,
yes.
as the mechanic, and I'm expecting to receive this, can the client who's entered into this agreement suddenly up and cancel it and phone their bank and say, don't pay this, don't honor this agreement?
No, they can't that. If they do that, which is something that, remember, the small business never had before.
Mm.
If they do that, upon entering all this information through the Zakar payment system, it then sends, that means agreed and signed agreements
mm.
to both of you mm. on your emails. Mm. It means the small business has a recourse,
mm.
unlike before, because they have a contract that clearly stipulates and records
mm.
from a credible solution provider like Zakar to say that this person only paid two of the debit orders and they have not paid the other two. That means then the small business can then take a legal action or hand over that account to small claims courts or recoveries and that sort of stuff.
Mm.
Also, what we've put as an agreement is at some point, we as Zakar can aggregate all these merchants,
mm.
even though the monies are small. But if you aggregate them, mm. they add into billions of rents.
But the township economy was built.
Exactly. And now, if you can aggregate that and you can sell to maybe small debt collectors or something, at least the merchant can leverage or get some form of money
mm.
instead of getting nothing
mm.
at all.
Mm.
You know, so that's where we are saying we can leverage. This is where the solution sets everything apart.
Mm.
Yes.
So how do service providers looking for the Zakar platform get hold of it? What are the costs of the devices? I see you brought in two devices into studio.
Yes.
I'm guessing they have slightly different...
Not necessarily. They're like practically features the same.
Okay. So take me through the devices and take me through the capabilities.
So the capabilities of the device, some of the devices, even the devices, you are able to, for instance, if you... I'm sure you know, if you now go to your banks and you want to buy a car...
Mm.
When you sign your agreement, you sign it off-site. Practically, you're not in the bank.
Mm.
So they even ask you to hold your ID
mm.
and your photo.
Verification.
Take your verification.
Yes.
So this device can do all those things
okay.
as well. And all those documents can be uploaded.
Mm.
And then they form part of that contract.
Mm.
Yeah. And then the small businesses can find us. We are available in all social media platforms. We're at Zakar, Zakha.
Mm-hmm.
All social media platforms. And they can also like easily reach us or at our offices. Our number there, let me just quickly get the number, is 072-655-0132. 072-655-0132. So I just want to add something, if you'd allow me. You see, when we designed this, we didn't only design this for retail.
Mm.
I want to show you something about how big the property market is in perhaps in the township. So practically every second house has two rooms or three rooms at the back.
Absolutely.
And most of those people are renting. Mm. And them renting those rooms, they're paying like 2,000 rands a month. And we realize that most of the people in the township actually live off this money.
Mm.
And but this money is not actually recognized in the normal financial by financial institutions because it's not going in there. Now, what it's not going into their bank accounts. Mm. So what we've designed Zaka is we've designed something that, that still falls under Zaka FlexiPay, mm-hmm. but it's called RentCo. Mm-hmm. So what it does is as an owner of three, four rooms at the back of your house in township, we onboard you as a merchant, like the way we onboard the merchant
service who sells,
service provider. Yes. We onboard you. Then once we've onboarded you, you can do this on your cell phone. You can onboard all your tenants. All their documents, everything, including the bank accounts,
mm-hmm.
then we can debit them on your behalf.
Mm.
And that money goes straight into your bank account. They don't have to take taxes to go withdraw cash and come back and pay you. Because what happens is, if you get that money as cash, you start sending your child to go pay society somewhere, to go buy bread, to go this and that. That money never makes it to the bank account.
Mm.
Now, that on its own is problematic in the sense that when you finally have to go to the bank and you want to take a loan, the bank sees some cash of 1,000, 2,000 coming into your account. They're not sure where it comes from. So therefore, they cannot base your scoring
yes.
on that cash. But if it comes from a credit solution provider like Zaka, mm-hmm. and they see it every month as part of your rental collections, mm-hmm. that money can then be used as part of your income. So practically your revenue.
Mm.
And therefore, you can qualify for many other products, banking products like loans, maybe student loans because you want to take kids to school.
Mm.
You can also buy cars or even extend. Get a loan to extend. Maybe you want to build more rooms mm. so you can get more income from the rooms.
Mm.
So practically by that, we are achieving two things. Transforming the township economy in terms of property township economy, which is worth billions of rands.
Mm.
I mean, we did a model at just 15,000 land lots. That's like Soweto, practically very small portion of Soweto, with four rooms each paying 2,000 rand. You can process over 1.2 billion rand of payments per month. At the current moment, these payments are processed mainly through e-wallets and cash, mainly cash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so now we're saying we can alleviate that and help our people to qualify for more financial products. And so practically what you're achieving is two things, economic inclusivity,
mm-hmm.
by virtue of taking the township property market and having it economically included.
Mm.
Now, secondly, it's financial inclusivity because all of a sudden this person who never qualified for a loan, who never qualified for any financial products, can now qualify because the bank can score them properly.
Mm.
And they can achieve much more when they qualify because then they have now a borrowing power. And, you know, with borrowing power, you know what we can do with borrowing power. If you use credit properly, you can reach your next level.
Mm. Yes. Tabo, how much does the solution cost? How much does the device cost? How much how much fees do you charge? So that if I am a service provider looking at Zaka as a potential solution, how much is it going to cost me for my business?
It's costing at the moment 2.5%. We are running specials where we are giving devices for free at the moment.
Okay.
Yes, until further notice.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
So the devices are costing people nothing at the moment.
Mm.
Yeah, but we're only charging transaction fees of like 2.5%.
Well, we wish you all the best of luck, Tabo. That sounds like a very interesting business. I like that you are solving the problems as the problems are there in the township economies and in other economies. Small businesses need this kind of assistance. Those folks that are out there wanting to get hold of Tabo and his team, the company is Zaka, Z-A-K-H-A-A. You can reach out to them on all social media platforms. They're available on all socials as well. Give them a shout if you've got all of your business needs. I'm sure they'd be happy to assist. It's coming up to 7 o'clock. I have to say goodnight because Greg Host is standing by to give you the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the top sport team. So from my side, goodnight.